Welcome back. 38 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. Was it the most exciting debate since Lincoln debated Douglas, or was it a real yawner? Here to fill us in on the vice presidential debate last night, Dr. Kent Kaiser. He's the chair of the communications department at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So did you stay up and watch the entire thing, or did you drink a nice glass of warm milk and just go to bed?
I watched the whole thing, and then I actually went out to a movie afterwards.
Had to decompress. Now, Mike Pence and Tim Kaine aren't exactly known as firebrands, but how did they come across last night?
Well, it's interesting to see the strategies that each of them used. Tim Kaine, I thought, came across as a yippy little terrier during the debate, honestly. Most of the time when you look at these vice presidential debates, what you're looking for is to see if you think that each of the candidates could actually step into the role of president, which this year is probably more important than has been in the past.
Because
both of the presidential candidates are pretty old comparatively. Yeah. And so from an actuarial standpoint, there's a better chance that one of them is going to have to step in.
Thank you. Spoken like a true insurance agent.
I know, right?
Yes. And who knows about health problems we don't know about, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I think if you were being introduced to Tim Kaine for the first time, and honestly, I have to say that I kind of was. I mean, I knew about him. I knew about his policies, and I'd heard about him, but I hadn't actually heard him speak much. And I must say, he really didn't come across very well because of the number of interruptions and just sort of his style. Meanwhile, I think Trump's running mate, really did a pretty good job. I mean, wow, he came across as very likable and a very serious candidate. In fact, I'd say he came across as more serious and more likable than Trump, Clinton, and Kaine all combined. I really think that, all along now, Trump has been saying, oh, what a great guy Trump or Pence is. And I wonder at what point Trump might be, kind of backpedaling when he realizes that Pence is better than he is. I think people can feel really comfortable with Pence. I think people could honestly feel comfortable with either of them stepping into the presidency, but Pence really did a great job. He didn't fall for the traps that Kaine was setting up. Kaine kept trying to bait Pence into trying to defend a lot of Trump's off-the-wall comments, and Pence never fell into that trap. He would just sort of shake his head and then ignore the issue and talk about broader issue and avoid addressing those Trump comments directly. So I thought that he did just a really great job. I think that they both covered a lot of substance, which is something we didn't see in the presidential debate that took place recently. And I think they both showed a lot of knowledge of the issues. And again, I think people could feel comfortable with either of them stepping into the presidency.
If you were going to pick maybe one of the highlights or the strongest arguments made by each of the candidates, vice presidential candidates, what might they be?
Well, of course, from my perspective, being strongly pro-life, I think that when they started the discussion of pro-life issues and where how their faith has guided them, I think those were the strongest points.
I didn't see it. So, for those folks that didn't, tell us what happened.
Well, I think that Pence really did a good job there, where he talked about the sanctity of life. And Kaine was interesting in that, he's a Catholic, and he talked about being a Catholic but not wanting to force his personal pro-life views on other people. You've heard that before from other candidates, like including Joe Biden, the current vice president. He says sort of the same thing. And there are Catholic bishops who will say, well, you can't be a Catholic and be pro-choice. And so it's got to create some cognitive dissonance if he truly is personally pro-life and then standing there and advocating for a policy that is exactly the opposite. But I think both of them did a pretty good job of articulating how their faith has guided them. And I think we could probably feel pretty comfortable as people of faith, again, with Pence particularly, because, it's pretty clear that he is a strong social conservative based on some strong religious principles. And I think Kaine articulated his faith pretty well. I think, again, though people have to kind of question how he comes down on certain policies. Another one policy that you talked about, actually, though, was was capital punishment, how he, as a Catholic, he would be opposed to capital punishment, but the law in his state, in Virginia, was for capital punishment. So he supported the law as it was supposed to be implemented, which is interesting, kind of interesting to for the moderator to have kind of pushed him into that position of talking about that particular issue, because it's kind of like saying, well, you support this, you support this issue that your religion doesn't support. But then she was basically giving him an opportunity to say that he, you know, on a policy level, he supported this position that most Americans agree with. So kind of weird to say, well, it just to suggest it's sort of a bad thing that he would support that policy when most Americans support it. So it was kind of a backhanded way of helping him look good to voters. In my mind, that's the way I kind of read it.
Now, last week's presidential debate did not inspire a lot of confidence in either candidate. I think most Americans would agree with that. But at least one poll afterward showed Trump lost some of his support. What are Americans saying, and just looking at the polling data, what are they saying about Trump's performance and his credibility?
Well, there are a couple of things that have happened since that debate. It was not only just the debate, and yes, he lost some ground as a result of the debate, and he wasn't doing himself any favor by tweeting about a former Miss Universe for a week. But another thing that happened that I think, as I'm looking at the polls, I think probably hurt Trump, or actually helped Clinton is the way we should probably put it, is that Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, had another gaffe where he couldn't even name one single world leader who he admired. And it looks like his poll numbers have disintegrated a bit. And it looks like, and we knew this before, that a lot of people who would be Clinton supporters were supporting Johnson. It looks like they've gone back over to Clinton. So it's not only that Trump hurt himself, but Johnson hurt himself, which then helped Clinton. So she's benefited from both of those things happening in the last week or so.
Always good to know your world leaders.
Well, to be able to name one past or present. Oh, I mean, God. Come on.
Well, he knows his state well, so there you go. Okay, we're talking to Dr. Ken Kaiser, one of our political consultants here at Faith Radio. We'll take a quick break and be right back. By the way, I love the terrier analogy. That was really interesting if you saw the debate. Welcome back. It's 47 past the hour. Bill Meyer with Dr. Kent Kaiser from the University of Northwestern. We've been recapping the vice presidential debate and last week's presidential debate. Let me ask you this, Kent. Do you think the flap over Trump's tax return has hurt him? Do you think most Americans now feel he has something to hide?
Well, I think that there's probably that specter. I personally think it would have been wise for him to just release them and own up to whatever is in there. I think that probably it's probably the case that he's had a lot of tax shelters, so it's probably all following the law. I think he has a point to make that he hasn't made, though, too, which is that as someone who has been probably among the most taxed people over his lifetime and so on, that he is in a unique position to understand the complexity of the tax code and to fix it. And I think he should be saying that he's not in there to fix it for somebody like him who has the ability to pay accountants and so on to take care of it all, but he's in it for all the rest of us who find it a super complex and Byzantine system. I mean, that rings true. I mean, think about it. Every year we all have to go somewhere to get our taxes done, or we have to sit at home and use some kind of a program to figure out our taxes, and it's a complex process, and most of us probably don't feel very confident that we haven't paid more than we should have, and it's just too complex for the normal person to understand. He should just come out and say something like that.
Okay, so we have two more presidential debates coming up. Rumor has it Chris Christie has been recruited to help Trump prepare for the next one. Do you think Trump will listen to him? And if so, what will Christie likely tell him to do?
Well, I think he probably will have to listen to people, if it's Christie or whoever. And I think Christie probably is well positioned to help because he's been in that position of being in presidential debates before, not in the too distant past, and up against Trump, and he knows Trump's style. And I think that Trump will probably listen. I think that there's no way he's in such a vacuum that he didn't realize that he lost that last debate. And I think he has actually a real opportunity now, because now the expectation is going to be pretty low for the next two debates. And I think that Trump can come back and really shine. I got this feeling in watching that first presidential debate that Trump had a good point like in his pocket, but never quite pulled it out. And he never quite got to the punch or the punchline when he was in that debate. He was kind of talking around issues, and he just needs to be much more succinct and get to the punch.
Almost have the punchlines written down. You saw Hillary referring to her notes a lot.
Right.
And Trump not. It
right.
was extemporaneous, and you're right. He kind of went around in circles sometimes. And maybe Christie can help him say, okay, when she says this, this is your comeback.
Well, and the other thing he needs to do, too, is not fall for the bait. I mean, he just needs to do he needs to be disciplined like Pence was last night, where when Hillary throws out some criticism of his business or his, whatever, that he ignores that criticism and then maybe brings it up later on, like the next day or something. But to ignore that criticism in the debate and make the points he needs to make. And those need to be some pointed attacks on Clinton about her policy, especially on foreign policy, especially how she's been part of practically every foreign policy disaster over the last several years. And some of them have been real doozies. And she doesn't have a lot of real successes to show for herself, and he needs to point that out, that she's really part of the problem. Because I do think that the one message that will resonate, and Pence really made a point of this in his closing statements yesterday, is that people are sick and tired of the everyday workings of Washington, and they want a change. And Trump needs to drive home the idea that he is that change. And right now, he isn't making that sale. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody like Chris Christie can help him to understand how he needs to close that deal.
Okay, on the other side of the political fence, the Clintons and President Obama have never had the coziest of relationships. And on Monday, Bill Clinton blasted Obamacare. He told voters in Michigan that it had created a, quote, crazy system, that those who can't qualify for government subsidies are, quote, getting killed. I'm assuming Bill means they're getting killed by skyrocketing insurance premiums, not killed literally. Does it seem like more and more Democrats are distancing themselves from Obamacare?
Well, they definitely are, and especially on the state level. I mean, we've seen it in Minnesota where the premiums are going to skyrocket next year, and they're being allowed to do so in many states. Many states, the premiums are going up by 40, 50, 60-some percent. And so Bill Clinton is right, and it's just really interesting to see a Democrat like him articulate what the frustrations are of normal everyday Americans. I think we have a clip from Bill Clinton here he is in his own words.
So you've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world. It doesn't make any sense. The insurance model doesn't work here. It's not like life insurance. It's not like casualty. It's not like predicting flood. It doesn't work.
I think he really articulated well what most people feel is a frustration. And there's been other problems. One of the issues he didn't actually get into is how this has affected the whole employment model, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so many employers now are hiring people only on a temporary or part-time basis.
Or so, just up to a certain number of hours.
That's right. Yeah. So as to avoid having Obamacare premiums kick in for them, and so they don't have to offer Obamacare. And so unbelievable how many businesses are doing that, where they've actually cut back employees' hours, or when they're hiring new people, they hire two at part-time rather than hiring one full-time. It's led to a lot less robust economy for individuals, particularly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kent, as we wrap things up this morning, you sent me a fascinating story yesterday from the New Republic on Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it revealed really the liberal mindset in America and where we may be headed if Hillary was to become president.
Right. Well, it's really interesting because, you know, she was friends with Antonin Scalia, whose seat is still open. And it's interesting to Ruth Bader Ginsburg seems to have become very frustrated in as much as her life's work has not come to fruition. So she's become more aggressive, where she used to be an advocate for being really civil and so on. She has actually stepped out and started taking on political views and or expressing political views and taking on political candidates and so on, which is strange for a Supreme Court justice to do. But it does show the aggressiveness of the liberal mindset at this point in history.
And she's one of those that if Hillary was to be elected, could retire and could be replaced with a, you know, 40-year-old liberal Supreme Court justice that would be on the court for another 40 years.
Well, right. And there would be great pressure for Clinton to appoint somebody who was equally as liberal. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is about as liberal as they come. But there would be great pressure to do that. And I think that Ginsburg probably will decide to retire sometime in the next few years. So it's very likely the next president would be the one who would be replacing her.
Hmm. Another reason why conservatives are very concerned about the U.S. Senate and keeping control of the Senate. And we'll talk maybe more about that in coming weeks. Our guest, Dr. Kent Kaiser from the University of Northwestern. Thanks for your time, Kent.
Thanks for having me on.